Welcome to the Film Coterie. I'm Roger.
And I'm Adam.
And this is our Dune Part 2 episode, Adam. How are you?
Good. It is good to be back in theaters. It's been a while. This was a particularly barren January and February for releases.
Yeah.
Theaters have been hurting. Attendance numbers were obviously down. So it was good news all around that Dune exceeded expectations, both critically and box office wise, as people flocked back. We were in a packed theater when we saw Dune on Thursday night.
Yeah, absolutely. It feels good to get back at it. And we're going to have some more movies this month. We got Ghostbusters coming up. And what else is coming up in March? We got
Godzilla and Kong working as buddy cops.
Yeah. The buddy cop version of Godzilla and Kong.
If you haven't seen the trailer, the way they run together looks like your typical buddy cop movie.
I'm telling you, that is straight gold right there, buddy.
Kong is some kind of gauntlet. They're fighting an evil Kong. It's definitely going for.
He puts on the
Infinity gauntlet.
Yeah, the Infinity gauntlet. He's got to punch something.
They're hurling buildings at each other. It looks like just the movie. You just need to get the big popcorn on and
absolutely. It's what we're going to do. We're going to find the biggest theater, biggest screen in Columbus we can go to, baby. We're going to see this thing.
It'll be the opposite of Godzilla Minus One, where you're not going to be worried too much about humanity in this one.
And then we have a new Kung Fu Panda, right? It's coming out.
Yep.
So it's coming out in March, and I'm sure that'll be a big hit. It's got a huge following. But, okay, here's the downside. Has it been too long since the last Kung Fu Panda? Has that waned a little bit, or do you think people come flocking back?
It's at a good point, because there hasn't been a family movie in some time, so I think people will go regardless. There's been a real need for family-friendly entertainment, so I think it's going to win the weekend for that, for sure. And, you know, people might still have nostalgia for it. I don't think they're old enough to have their own kids yet. But if they're nostalgic for Kung Fu Panda, they may go back, even if they're a little older than what the audience is skewing towards.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, hopefully we'll get to see some films and bring some more podcasts out there. And, of course, on our Facebook page and different things, you can always connect with us there. We always love hearing what you guys think of films we review. And I usually get a text message with people giving me their opinion, but throw that in Facebook every once in a while. Let us hear what you think, you know?
If Facebook is working, we survived an outage today that everyone was talking about.
I know. I haven't checked since tonight. I might be off Facebook. You don't know. Oh man. But we have a movie to review tonight, right?
Dune Part 2.
So Adam, let's just jump right into this. So set the stage, a little spoiler alert here. This is part two. So this is a continuation of the, when did Dune come out? 2 years ago? Or was it been 3 years?
It's been 3 years, I think.
3 years. And tell us, give us a little background on how Dune came to the theater and who this Denis Villeneuve guy is.
So Dune arrived at a very unfortunate time in theatrical history because it was during the pandemic. You could actually stream it at home or go see it in a theater.
Yeah.
So it had limited box office potential. It did fine considering everything else that year, but a lot of people saw it at home. And, this is a property that's been around for a long time. I don't know how well it had melded into the pop culture because we had the David Lynch version of the film in the 80s. We've had a couple mini series that have shown on the Sci-Fi Channel. There's been board games. There's been computer games.
Yeah.
But it's always kind of felt on the edge of mainstream. Where this movie, I think, particularly where the actors involved, like Timothy Chalamet, did pick up a younger audience, did pick up a more mainstream audience with part one. And we're definitely seeing the returns of that with part two. It had wide appeal. I saw the exit polling. All age groups were giving it an A for this part two. It was attracting about 58% male, 42% female. Well, so a little better there.
When you look at the cast, like you said, Chalamet, Zendaya.
Right.
And then you've got the Josh Brolins, the Javier Bardems. Then you got the Austin Butler. They've got the who's who of young and old in this.
It's terrific casting, and yeah, it's not stunt casting.
Florence Pugh is in this. Dave Bautista's in this. And my goodness, they have Christopher Walken in this film, you know?
I've not seen Walken in a while.
I mean, come on. You have a Skarsgård in this film. I mean, there's just so much. The cast is just so solid. That, to me, says a lot about Denis Villeneuve's ability to just, people want to be in stuff he makes.
And this was the right film for him because he was a fan of the material. So he's able to kind of translate it into film in a way that's really lively. It's never a slow film, even though a lot of it's about political intrigue and everything else. He makes a very lively film here in both parts. But at the same time, he's making it more accessible, even though characters are throwing out names like Gam Jabbar or Liaz al-Gibran or the Kazowitz Hederic. You know, I'm butchering these.
Yeah.
Kwisatz Haderach. You know, and Bene Gesserit, all these foreign terms, he avoids the pitfall of the original Lynch film because he's not slowing down to explain it to you. You're just thrown into this universe and you make sense of it as it goes, but it works.
Yeah, I know. I agree 100%. And maybe because you and I are also board game fans as well, too. And so we've been playing the Dune board games that have come out over the last couple of years. So the Harkonnen, the Freeman, the Bene Gesserit, they're all kind of friends of ours now, right. You know? So you and I are maybe a little more biased in the sense of we kind of necessarily not, I mean, I read Dune like 30 years ago, right out of high school. I read it and loved it and thought it was weird and a little bit eerie. It kind of messed with my head a little bit. There's a real darkness to a couple of the characters that, you know, was a little unsettling for me, but I just thought it was a great science fiction piece of, you know, material that I didn't know if they could really lean into it and portray that whole universe, you know.
For a cultural touch point, Dune is as important to science fiction as Lord of the Rings is to fantasy.
Oh, yeah. You're exactly right, Adam. That's the mark there for them. And so, you know, I gotta say, after seeing Dune Part 1 and now Dune Part 2, it is amazing to me. To me, it was like a no compromise. Okay, we're going to actually show you what the books were like. Now, they did tone down some of the really, really darker elements of couple of the characters, but still, the same characters came off as weird and eerie and creepy and just evil, you know?
And if you're not familiar with the story, it's a story about scarcity. It's in the future. There's the planet Arrakis. It has a resource that everybody needs called spice, because spice is the only thing that makes space travel at faster than light speeds possible. The whole universe needs spice. So you have political machinations going into place between these families. And if you watch Game of Thrones, the story is going to be a little bit familiar because George R. R. Martin might have borrowed some of these storylines.
Yeah,
but
thanks.
Bad things happen to the family, and we have a son that's out for revenge, but is also burdened by kind of a white savior storyline that Herbert was smart the way he wrote it, and Villeneuve was even more clever, I think, in how he addresses it as this burden. You know, it's not a pure white savior movie, but it addresses some of the nature of that storyline in a very clinical way, in a good way to think about it.
No, I agree.
It's self-aware on that end.
Well, you know, and as with any great science fiction story, they're going to speak into the modern day world as we know it and give their opinion. And so you can't help but draw similarities between like spice and oil production today and how it moves the whole industrial world and all the political machinations and fighting over oil. It's not an accident that spice is sitting on a sand dune desert planet, you know, where, you know, there are great and terrible creatures, yet people still indigenous there that live there, and it's their way of life. And so it's just some great, great, you know, there's a religious element to it. There's zealots there. I mean, you know, you're going to get the whole nine yards. I just love the story and love the characters. And so let's talk a little bit about Adam, just the cinematography and how that we went and saw it in 70mm. How did this look to you, and what's your impressions of this compared to maybe the first one?
So Dune is a story of scope. Nothing is small in the world of Dune. We have giant sandworms, we have giant sand crawlers, we have the city of Arrakeen, which is just kind of brutalist architecture. Yeah. And Villeneuve captures that. His characters are small on the screen. He gets intimate with some of the camera work when he needs to, but he makes this world and this universe feel huge and epic. And for those reasons alone, it's worth seeing on the screen. I mean, it's, you could say this movie is just boring because it's all brown, but it really isn't. He delivers on the visual front just through set design, and the CG is all pretty good, and just the framing of everything. It's very dynamic, and you're never just staring at sand dunes.
No, and then and when they went to the Harkonnen homeworld, it has a black sun, right? Mm-hmm. And so it was shot, like you were telling me, it was shot with some special cameras and stuff, and it is incredible visually. It's just, you can't take your eyes off the screen. It's just like, wow, you're thinking this is all done CGI with computers, and there is some CGI definitely in it, but there's some craft to filmmaking going on as well.
Yeah, and Villeneuve was clever there as well, because the Harkonnen homeworld of Jedi Prime isn't really described all much in the book. We know they have a black sun. It's actually killing them with radiation. That's why the Harkonnens are bald in this and kind of sickly. But their world is just a toxic manufacturing plastic world underneath a black sun, and what that would do for colors and anything else. So Villeneuve actually shot all those sequences on Jedi Prime in infrared, and then converted it to incredible black and white. And it's really striking the way it looks. Characters, their eyes and everything. It's a very stunning sequence there. And that contrasts against where the Atreides family, these are the good guys. They come from a beautiful ocean world of Caladan that's all about nature and the existence, coexistence of humanity and nature, where the Harkonnens are just an industrial waste planet where they've mined every resource from it.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so much going on here beyond that. Let's talk about sound. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Adam, but did you not feel that there's a lot of use of silence in this film, like really quiet score at times, and then a slow build to something dramatic? Did you find that the case with several of the scenes, how silent the film was?
Especially at the beginning. The beginning is kind of a reset for this story. We're not going to spoil part one, and we probably should add in here, if you've not seen part one, you do need to see it before this film. This film does not stand on its own.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah.
It's a direct continuation. There's no catch up. It's just jumping into the story literally minutes after the first one. So from there, it's a lot quieter, and it's a sort of reset, because towards the end of the movie, you're going to have a lot of epic action sequences and everything else. But these are just characters that are trying to find themselves, figure out what to do next. They're in kind of a stunned moment of what's going on. But the sound, they've really did a good job coming up with sort of an alien but yet tribal music.
That's exactly where I was going to go. Yes.
You would buy come from the Fremen.
The music.
It has, you know, singers, it has a choir. They're not singing in English, obviously.
No, but it's almost, there's a religious tone, tribal religious music, you know?
And it's instantly identifiable now. If you hear it, you would know it came from Dune. It's kind of a landmark score for that purpose. You would recognize it in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about some of the performances in the film. Timothy Chalamet in the lead. What'd you think? Is he carrying this as a lead? Did you have any issues?
No, I think he does a really tremendous job here, because his character has to go from the second in command to really taking charge and having this burden of leadership on him. And it's not just a burden. He can see the future. He sees horrible things that he could cause if he takes up the mantle. He sees suffering. He sees billions of people starving if there's a holy war. It's these choices that he has to face and what he does next. Revenge isn't as simple, because it doesn't just affect his family. He's going to light a spark that could change the outcome of the universe. And I think he does a really good job throughout this film carrying that weight. And then when he finally decides and makes his decision, you buy it. You have no...
It's powerful,
You've seen the path he's walked. You understand why he does it.
Yeah, I never get chills in a film ever. And when he buys in, when he decides, okay, I'm 100% in, And he makes a speech in front of the whole, like thousands of people. It literally gave me chills as you saw the whole crowd come behind him and realize, okay, this is our Messiah. This is our Savior. This is the guy that's going to free us and give us our planet back. I thought it was absolutely powerful. Let's talk about Zendaya. I know that there was a little bit of rumor. Well, first of all, it feels to me, I don't know, maybe you can correct me on this, Adam, but it feels to me like they maybe expanded her role to give a little more, you know, to just kind of bring forth her side and a more of a female lead and that kind of thing. Her role felt expanded a little bit to me, but, you know, I guess there were some rumblings, you know, can she really pull this off? Can she really, you know, and I personally thought she was fantastic in the film. I didn't see any issue at all, but, you know, what was your thoughts with Zendaya?
Yeah, she's really good in this. And I didn't have any doubts because I thought she's great in Euphoria, you know, and she can act. But with this role, she's presenting us with a sort of framework of the Fremen. She's more of the non-traditionalist. She's young. She helps us kind of understand where people in her tribe are coming from. But she's also a different viewpoint for Paul. She grounds him. He's come from royalty, and now he's among, you know, commoners and a different culture. And she teases him. You buy the relationship. They have great chemistry. Sure. And well, you learn to care about her just as he does, too.
Yeah. Well, there's no doubt that she loves him. She has great feelings for him. But she's not buying in. She's not going to buy into the Savior, the Messiah deal, 100%. She's excited to fight alongside him and hopefully bring her people to freedom and, you know, and liberate the planet. But she's not buying in, and it comes at great cost toward the end of the film for her. There's great conflict within her.
And she's a good foil to Stilgar. That's Javier Bardem in this movie. He's the one that really believes Paul is the chosen one. And to almost comical fashion, everything Paul does is what the Savior would do. He's completely mystified by him. And where he's buying into everything Paul's doing, you'd see Zendaya's character, Chani, just roll her eyes almost, you know, not really believing this matters.
Yeah. Did you think Stilgar, Javier Bardem, it borderlined almost being too much, like, don't lean too far into the comedy? This is supposed to be a serious, epic, you know, high science fiction. And I kept finding myself grinning at him, but I'm like, okay, but don't lean too far into that, you know?
He's literally the only comic element in the film.
Oh, yeah.
There's nothing else funny in here. And, you know, he's already a meme. As of the week after release, everyone's making memes about Stilgar.
Oh, no.
So I think he's funny, and I think it was fine. I don't think it went too far. And, you know, with the other supporting cast here, I don't think I've ever said this about Josh Brolin before, but he really gives a warm performance here as Gurney Halleck. Brolin's great as cold characters.
Yes.
You know, gruff and everything else. But there's a warmth to Gurney as a mentor figure in seeing Paul again that I haven't really seen Brolin do before. And he's actually pretty good at being the warmer father figure, father substitute here.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. Christopher Walken, the Emperor, Florence Pugh, the Princess, both very, you know, Florence Pugh, very limited dialogue. You know, it's very much a physical performance for her. But I mean, again, I never, after seeing Fighting With My Family, which is she starred in as a wrestler, I never would have pictured her one day as a princess in Dune, but somehow she kind of pulls it off and looks pretty good at it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's all over the place in her role. She can be somewhat of a chameleon, which is good. I've seen her play noble ladies before in a few films, so it wasn't too much of a stretch. But if I was just going from Fighting With My Family to that, I could see the jump.
Well, it's the evolution of her as an actress. And yeah, I've seen her in a couple of things too, where she played more, royal-like characters and that kind of thing. And yeah, did very well. I guess just kind of wrapping up here, Adam, kind of final thoughts. And of course, if you haven't guessed, it's a film that I think you and I are both going to recommend wholeheartedly, with the caveat that you ought to go see one first, of course.
And then if you're a masochist, you can watch the 87 original. and just see how different it is. It's the whole story in 90 minutes, not 5 hours of these two films. So it's rushed. Yeah. You know, you can see the bones of the story there, but it's an interesting contrast. To me, this Dune Part 1 and Part 2 are both 5 out of 5s for me. I don't think you can make a better version of Dune. I think we've seen a real class act in how it was executed, and just the high water marks all around on every level production of this film.
Yeah, we're going to get some exploration of the world through some television stuff as well, too, it appears.
HBO's invested in it. Sort of like they're doing with the new Batman, where we're getting the Penguin show soon with Colin Farrell, is that HBO wants to expand on that universe and assume that there's audience interest. They're going to do a story about how the Bene Gesserit order started 10,000 years before this story. Nice. With the first two sisters, and it's called Dune the Prophecy, and I believe it's going to be on Max before the end of the year.
Excellent. Also, I noticed that there was a TV show, Dune, that got some pretty good reviews years back, but I haven't seen it. Did you watch any of it?
Way back in the day. So Sci-Fi adapted a couple of the books.
Okay.
But it's been so long since I've seen them. I just have faint memories of certain scenes.
Gotcha. Yep.
And it had a typical Sci-Fi budget. So the special effects are going to leave you wanting a little bit for more.
Okay. Well, and it looks like we're going to get a third film, right? Dune Messiah's coming.
It's not signed, but I mean, I think it's inevitable. The film sets it up. The story from Dune Messiah sort of wraps up Paul's storyline, so it's a good trilogy. It's a different book, but I think the plan was to do it in one film instead of two.
Okay.
And I wouldn't be surprised at all, just to keep it simple, if they just called it Dune Part 3.
Yeah, I bet so. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the Film Coterie. You can find us on all the social media platforms at Film Coterie. If you can spell Film Coterie, you're 99% there to finding us. So give us a shout out. Let us know what you thought of Dune 2. And we'll see you next time on another episode of the Film Coterie Podcast.